The University Tower chimes, ringing another session of Ask the Professor, the show in which you match wits with the University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo. Let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my left, he really doesn't want to take his hat off. It's Professor Stephen Manning.
It was just very cold, so I, you know.
It's cold out there.
We don't want your noggin cold.
You don't want to get your head cold, and you're not going to be able to think big thoughts.
That's right.
Exactly. So what's going on, Stephen? Apparently you're waiting for a painter.
Yeah, waiting for a painter. The good news is I arranged had a conversation with my brother in Phoenix today. Talking, main discussion was baseball tickets for Cactus League baseball.
Yay.
When we're there in March.
Now, are the Red Sox out there?
No,
the Red Sox are in Grapefruit League. Yeah, okay. This is Cactus League, so I think we're seeing San Diego and San Francisco.
That's not bad. That's great.
Big discussion about whether we're sitting in the sun or sitting in the shade.
Big discussion.
I wasn't part of this.
I asked you where, and you said as long as we get to go to the game.
Oh yeah, I did say that.
I told him that, and you have no restrictions.
So much fun.
It is fun.
Someone who really likes baseball is Professor Heather Hill. I know that for dang sure.
Dang sure.
Dang sure. Let's see what the Red Sox can do this year, though.
Let's.
Yes. They had a nice little couple pickups.
They did.
Yeah.
They did.
Tigers didn't, but okay.
Well, you know.
Lost more than they picked up.
Yes, they did.
Yes, they did.
We will actually go to Fenway Park this summer. We're planning a trip to New England.
Oh, we are.
Because her whole family is in New England. And
okay.
We're both from there, and we've never been there before to show, you know, our elementary schools we went to and all that neat stuff.
Nice.
So to start looking at the Red Sox schedule.
Yes, you do.
For Fenway.
Yes, you do. Excellent. I don't know. Tigers upped their fees. I shouldn't say any numbers. But usually you get like a bad team and a good, like cheap party suite. And that was not on the table this year. So we'll talk about that off the air.
Is this what's his name's last year?
It is Cabrera's last year.
Yeah, is he going to retire?
And he's not even going to play every game. So he's going to be platooned.
Taking it easy. Platooned.
Yep. Someone who never needs a platoon. I don't know. I just made that up. Professor Todd Hibbard.
Hey, hey.
What does that mean?
I know, right? I don't know.
Someone who loves the movie Platoon.
There we go.
Professor Todd Hibbard.
But on a completely different note, as a former resident of Lakeland, Florida,
Lakeland.
I used to get to see a lot of Tiger spring training games.
Oh, yeah.
And in fact, several of the Tigers players used our apartment complex as their spring training abode.
Nice.
So I will never forget the first spring I was there walking out of my apartment. And this is a throwback, so you'll have to be a true Tigers fan to get the reference. But walking out of my front door and standing right across from me was Mike Henneman.
Mike Henneman.
Wow.
I love it.
I was like, you're Mike Henneman. And he said, I am.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Thus began,
very cool.
Not a friendship.
Thus began the story.
That's right.
The Grapefruit League.
That's right.
Yes. Continuing around the table, Professor Mara Livesey is here from the Department of Chemistry and Biochemistry.
Hello.
How are you doing, Mara?
I'm doing very well. Today, a research student and I embarked on a new journey together.
Really?
Of interviewing students to do qualitative education research.
Oh, that's great.
And it was wild.
Awesome.
I interviewed the student that I know well because they're my advisee, but in this 45-minute interview, I just learned so much more about them. And I'm like, wow, this just like made my day.
Awesome. Good. Is there anything without names that you can share that was interesting to find out about this student?
Yeah. You know, this student started college in COVID. So it started remote and then coming back to school produced some social anxiety. And then learning about this student's kind of self-work and growth to like being more communicative, reaching out to people, forming friendships, it was beautiful.
That is awesome.
Lovely.
You know, we'll take the positive things when they come because there's been some tough days these last few weeks. But
so many tough days
lately.
We're getting
there. Yeah. We're getting there. Folks, this is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. If you stump the panel, you win a prize. You can send us questions in a number of ways, emailing us at atp@udmercy.edu. Find us on Facebook and Instagram, or listen on your favorite smart speaker by asking it to play Ask the Professor at University of Detroit Mercy.
Matt and the professors, Steve Price of Portland, Oregon writes, Dear professors,
I shall not begin this message as my nephew began his valedictory speech, graduating from law school, quote, honored professors, other professors, because all of you are highly honored. Here's some questions concerning what I think are cool facts. Get 6 out of 8 correct to pass. And I'm supplying you with your Ask the Professor imponderable at the end. Thank you, Steve Price of Portland, Oregon. First, an easy one. What did actor Robert Wool, in one of his most memorable roles, suggest as the best all-purpose wedding gift?
Candlesticks?
Candlesticks is the correct answer. From what movie?
Bull Durham.
Bull Durham, that's right.
Number two, Dorothy Parker was a famous wit and an accomplished writer. What did Miss Parker believe were the two most beautiful words of the English language?
The two most beautiful words in the English language.
Not now.
So you're on the right track.
Really?
Is all I'm
going
to say.
Wait, what did you? What?
I said not now.
The hint is, for Parker, writing was a job, not a hobby. Is
the
what
end?
The end is getting closer. Getting closer. No, I think you need to be about 1,000 billion times more acerbic to get this right.
Shut up.
Yeah, exactly. No, the correct answer is check and closed. Were the
most beautiful words.
Language. Very, very nice. From the Viking Portable Dorothy Parker, second revised edition, page 11. Very nice. Let's see, on what legendary movie, I don't even think that I knew this. What legendary movie was Dorothy Parker a screenwriter for? Huh.
Hmm.
No hint on this one, too, so you're going to have to go kind of raw. Yeah, I mean, a very famous, sort of funny writer.
What year was the
really,
movie?
Doesn't have the... I mean, it would have been Golden Age-ish, and it's a drama. It's not necessarily a comedy. It was recently remade. Oh, my gosh. Like, literally 1 or 2 years ago, and it won a bunch of Academy Awards as the remake. Did it star Lady Gaga in the main role?
Oh, A Star Is Born?
Star Is Born. She was a screenwriter for the original Star Is Born, yeah.
And the original was in what year?
Oh, gosh.
How many versions of that movie have there been?
No, it was seriously. A while ago.
Yeah, exactly. Huh. It's been a while. On to a subject somewhat less dangerous than antagonizing Dorothy Parker. Thanks, Steve. In professional wrestling, what's a hooker? What's a hooker?
Chokehold of some sort or a
headlock?
Getting close.
Headlock.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Your hint is a hooker could defeat even a highly skilled wrestler.
Chokehold?
No.
Like, is it when they get knocked out and so, of course, they're defeated?
No.
You take the rope from around the thing and put it around their neck.
In your leg lock.
No. I think that the issue here is that you're thinking sort of concepts and objects and moves, but it's actually a person. I think that's probably the only other clue I can give you.
A ref? The ref?
No, it's not the ref. That's a good guess.
The trainer.
No, it's not the trainer.
Some
either.
Of the put the hook, get the person out of the ring. Yeah.
Everybody gets one guess, so I need Mara and Todd to chime in.
The ringmaster?
Not the ringmaster.
Can you say the question again?
Mm-hmm. In professional wrestling, what was a hooker?
A hooker.
Mm-hmm.
Professional wrestling.
The hint was a hooker could easily defeat a highly skilled wrestler.
No pressure, Mara.
No pressure. Last person left.
It's a person and not an object.
It is a person, yeah. Mm-hmm. This is pretty interesting. Pretty interesting stuff.
Could defeat a professional.
No idea.
Did someone already say their trainer?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Right.
Well, then I have no guess.
So a hooker was a wrestler who knew many of the hooks of the old carnival wrestling days because in those days, carnivals had a wrestler who would take all comers to earn money. So the carnivals did not want to pay prize money. The carnival wrestlers developed a collection of painful or crippling holds that were either unknown or illegal in conventional wrestling and enable the carnival wrestler to defeat even a highly skilled challenger.
Like the Vulcan death grip?
Like the death grip, absolutely. I'm sorry, I can't help myself. I try not to go into too much detail, but For Christmas this year, my wife and I purchased Storyworth for my parents, if you're familiar with it.
No.
They get one question every week for 52 weeks, and they will digitize, type in their responses, and then it gets assembled into a beautiful sort of hardbound book at the end of the following year as sort of an answer to their life story. And you could even do it more frequently than a week. It was very, very nice. And I was just before coming over here reading my dad's response to last week's question, which involved what famous or what big trips did you take when you were little? And he had gone to a summer camp where on the very last night, everybody goes to sleep. And then you get roused several hours later. It's time for the fights to begin. My dad was kind of a tall, thin, scrawny guy. You might have, you know, seen that trope before. And he's like, what the heck is going on? It's time for the fights. Oh, last night, there's the fights. And he got a nickname and everything and had to fight a bunch of people.
Wow. Fisticuffs.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, just the most odd thing.
I have a very bad memory about that when I went to a camp, because I was like your dad, skinny but small, the 98-pound weakling, and they matched me against the next smallest kid, who was about twice my size.
Oof.
And I remember it was boxing, not wrestling, and the ring was up here. But I remember the thing was very bouncy, so you couldn't even get your footing. It was like a trampoline, like boxing and a trampoline. And you but this kid was very, very stable, and I was bouncing around. I got demolished.
Wow.
They had to stop the fight.
Where is this kid now?
Yeah, right.
Going after
Let's him. Track him down.
It was a YMCA camp on Cape.
I'm going to look him up on Facebook. What was his name?
Did you ever ask yourself what your parents were trying to say to you?
Yeah, right, exactly.
I called them midweek and said, could you come pick me up a week early?
Oh,
but they had their
gosh.
Schedule because the three boys cycle through the camp.
Right,
you know,
right.
So they'd come down on the weekend and pick one up and drop the other one off. Mm-hmm. They had the whole summer off.
Well, not exactly because, never mind.
Well, if you weren't there, you went to the grandparents.
Oh,
anyway.
Right.
Next question. What is a Gandhi dancer?
A Gandhi dancer?
Gandhi dancer?
A famous restaurant in Ann Arbor, the Gandhi Dancer. But what is a Gandhi dancer?
Gandhi dancer, I've heard that phrase.
Is it a type of food?
It is not. It is a person.
It's a cocktail.
Your hint is, there's a cocktail, same name.
Really?
Think of Gordon Lightfoot. He refers to them as navvies in one of his songs. Mm-hmm.
Gandhi dancer.
Navvies.
Navvy.
If only we had a Canadian ringer on the show, you know, Gordon Lightfoot.
Is it like a
goose?
Deck washer on a boat?
I mean, it is a job.
It's a job.
You're getting close, but it has nothing to do with being a seafarer.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Does it have anything to do with dancing?
It has nothing to do with dancing.
Nothing to do with
How
dancing.
Do you spell Gandhi?
Gandy.
That does not help.
I keep thinking gander. What's good for the goose is good for the gander.
It's a bird-related job.
Yeah. Is it a bird-related job? They're sweeping out the...
Sweeping out the parrot cage.
Yeah.
I think the last hint I could probably give you is, I would say, pretty key job to the settling of this country coast to coast.
Coast to coast. Mm-hmm. So westward expansion.
Pioneering.
Railroads? Something to do with railroads?
It has to do with railroads. I'm giving a pass on that one. It's the person who lays the ties down.
There you go.
So you could look it up
on
Wikipedia, Steve says, but this was one of my summer jobs in college.
Wow.
So put me down as the source.
All right.
Thanks,
yeah.
Steve.
A candy.
I wonder where that phrase for that job comes from.
And what cocktail accompanies that job?
Seriously.
Yeah.
Probably not a Gandhi dancer. It's all Manhattans at that level. Let me tell you, the driest vermouth you can get. At the onset of the Civil War, I believe, the American Civil War, what was the wealth of the South and what percentage of that wealth was in humans? Ooh, my.
Can you say this question again? I'm sorry.
Yes, at the onset of the Civil War, what was the wealth of the South and what percentage of that wealth was in human beings? So this is the way it's the... response is being presented in dollars, so the total wealth of the South, and then at what percentage of that wealth was tied up in owning human beings.
Is it in the millions?
It's in the billions of dollars.
It's in the billions.
Yeah, it's something like, $4 billion or something like that. Or am I?
You're pretty close. The hint says the percentage shows that Deep Throat would have been correct even back then. I like these very
follow
mysterious.
The money.
Follow the money. Yes, follow the money. So it says it's $22 billion, which in terms of orders of 10, I think you're pretty close.
22?
Because we have individual humans worth $22 billion in the year 2023. But 50% of that was...
Yeah. I would have guessed 60. Mm-hmm.
I was saying 70, but 50.
That's why they were so willing to fight.
Heck yeah.
60%.
Not giving up $11 billion. Unless you're Mark Zuckerberg on Tuesday.
Stephanie McCurry is the author of History of the Slave South. What was the cause of the Civil War? Follow the money is what Steve says. Yeah. There you go.
Yep. So,
in the aftermath of the Civil War, what did General Sheridan say about hell and Texas?
They're one and the same.
You know, it's great that you went there, but there's another level to this question.
All Texans should go to hell?
I mean, getting closer. Yeah, getting closer. The hint, I'm sorry, it has to do with opposition to Reconstruction. Not too surprisingly, opposition to Reconstruction. What did General Sheridan say about hell and Texas? This is from Du Bois, Black Reconstruction in America.
I was just looking at everything.
Everything is cited. This is great. You know what he said, professors? He said if he owned both hell and Texas, he would live in hell but rent Texas.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Yikes.
So you just weren't harsh enough, Mara.
Right.
Jeez. What writer said about what honor? In my heart, there may be doubt that I deserve this honor over other men of letters who I hold in respect and reverence, but there's no question of my pleasure and pride in having that prize for myself. Who was the author? What was the prize? No hint on this one.
It was Nobel Prize for Literature.
It's the Nobel Prize for Literature, famous American author.
Some American author with some level of humility.
Mark Twain?
Not Mark Twain.
Yes.
Not Mark Twain.
Faulkner?
I could give you initials, but I'm afraid it would give it away.
Hemingway?
It wasn't Hemingway. Initials J.S. You're in the same boat here.
John Steinbeck?
Steinbeck. Yes. Steinbeck. The Nobel Prize for Literature. I felt like there was actually a little bit of snark there, Stephen.
No. I was going to say that or the Pulitzer.
Yes.
What year was that one?
It did not say.
Steinbeck.
That was from the Viking Portable Steinbeck, revised edition, page 690.
Mm-hmm. This is annotated.
Can you have a portable Steinbeck?
I have some stuff.
You don't have one? Like in your back pocket right now?
Portable John Steinbeck.
Yes. What are Friedrich, Rue, and Petrus? I think I'll go right to the hint on this one. This question is designed to puzzle you. These are not prospective 2023 Tigers double play combinations. Friedrich, Rue, and Petrus. Rue is R-O-U-X. I actually learned this from my about-to-turn 15-year-old son. Couple years ago.
Are these characters in some sort of a game?
Are they Pokemon?
They're not people, and they're not
definitely
sort
not
of
Pokemon.
Pokemon? I don't know anything about
they're not
Pokemon.
Animals.
Pokemon.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're not cooking things.
They're not cooking things. Okay. We're getting closer.
They're not names.
It has to do with games.
Are they characters in video games?
Toys and games. They're not from video games, but that's a good guess since I mentioned my son.
Board games.
Partial credit. Board games is getting closer, but not exactly. Not cards either. It's sort of like an independent handheld game that's been around since the 80s. And it's not electronic.
Rubik's Cube
moves. That's right. Yeah. Exactly. Absolutely. Yes. Friedrich is the most widely used of the three Rubik's Cube moves mentioned. This is anybody familiar with speed cubing? How the people will solve it with one hand as quickly as they can? The world record is less than 2 seconds.
Oh my gosh.
It's like amazing. I have no idea how they do it. Real fast, yeah.
What? No.
You won't even believe it if you see it.
One of my students this semester told me that she's a speed Rubik's Cube solver.
There you go.
Yeah. I asked her what her fastest time was, and she wouldn't divulge.
Oh.
She wouldn't share.
Wow.
Yeah, interesting. Wow. Professor, several years ago, the panel correctly answered my question. I guess Steve has sent questions before. I'm so sorry, Steve.
Yeah.
About what caused the end of the slide rule industry. The answer was, of course, the introduction of affordable calculator by Texas Instruments. This is a bit of a follow-up. What did Texas Instruments do to make sure its calculator would supplant the slide rule?
They installed the game Blockman.
I mean, that's a good guess, but that's not what it says here. The hint is, what applies to any tool? That's your hint. What applies to any tool?
A long battery life.
No, that's not what it says here.
An on button.
Any tool. What applies to any tool?
Portability.
They bought out all the slide rule companies.
They bought the patent.
Getting closer, Todd.
They burnt all slide rules.
They declared slide rules against God. Yes.
They made it affordable?
I mean, sure. So that was, it did say affordable electronic calculator by TI, but they had to go one step further. Yeah.
They gave them away for free?
I mean, that's a good answer. Very, very good capitalistic answers. You know what they did? They produced a book to go with the calculator that showed them that it could solve everything from balancing a checkbook to trig statistics, physics, chemistry, etc. They showed that it was applicable to lots of different kinds of people. So So I didn't get the book for the hammer that I bought a few years ago. I should probably go back and try to figure that out.
That explains a lot.
Yes. A priest was brought in to give Voltaire his last rites. When the priest asked Voltaire if he renounced Satan, what was Voltaire's most famous reply? Voltaire. I've never heard this before. This is great. This is
It's a comedic response.
Pretty solid. Pretty solid response.
Renounce Satan.
If you renounce Satan.
How can I
Satan,
renounce myself?
Yeah.
What? My good friend Satan?
I said something about the priest being there.
Something about the priest being there. It's sort of hard to. Yeah.
Will you renounce Satan with me?
No, thanks.
No.
He sent his five lieutenants throughout the boroughs.
I mean, the thing is, you're all doing this wonderful little dance.
A little dance around.
Around, because you have a pretty good idea what Voltaire may have said, who apparently said, now, my good man. This is no time for me to be making enemies.
Ooh.
I thought that was cute. Yes.
Not this close.
Not this close. Okay. Thanks so much, Steve, from Portland, Oregon, for sending us those questions. They were great. Thank you, by the way. I wish you all a wonderful 2023. You too, Steve. And I'm sorry for not recognizing you had sent us questions before. You've included an imponderable, and that is awesome. Frankly, if people started putting a quick imponderable at the end of every set of questions, you know you're going to be getting on the air. For imponderable, Todd, is we have a listener, Frank Burrows, and he and his family want to know more about us. And so they send us questions like, tell us your favorite movie and, you know, things like that.
Why do you want to know more about us?
Right.
Don't you want to know more about us?
Oh, always.
Here it is. Which book from your freshman year in college had the biggest impact on you? This doesn't have to be anything assigned, just something that being a freshman caused you to read. Oh, my.
A freshman year of college.
I can't remember that far back.
I know, that's asking me to remember
even I can
a long
barely
time ago.
It's like 15 years.
I think the youngest one should go first, Tamara.
I just threw up in my throat a little bit. Okay.
Book that impacted me from my freshman year?
I had a good book that I read. And it was assigned for a class, and it's not some chemistry textbook or anything, but it was, what's-his-face, you know, because really it was really memorable. it was 10 Philosophical Mistakes. I had to read it for Philosophy 1000 with Vaughn Adams, and that was a good class. I liked that class a lot.
I'm not going to remember the name of this book, but my freshman writing seminar was about, like, food and ethical production of food. And so we read The Omnivore's Dilemma.
Mm-hmm.
And like that impacted me. And I'm not remembering the name of this other book that we read, but it was about how pigs are raised. And so learning about, like, you know, how livestock in general are raised in this country was super impactful to me.
Sure.
And changed the way that I think about buying and eating meat.
Nice.
Wow, that was really good.
Nice. Yeah.
I like that a lot. Omnivore's Dilemma, that gets a big thumbs up.
A good book, yeah.
Eat food, not so much. Mostly plants. There you go. There's your diet. Mm. All right, three parts of the table. Very silent right now.
So I don't know if this was for my first year of college, but I can say there. I only kept one book from my college career.
Wow.
So I started my college career with a different major than I ended with. So in my first major, I only kept one book. And I carted this book around. We moved quite a bit in my 20s and 30s, and I carted this book around with me all over the country. And my wife would always say, "Why are we carting this book around?" It was my textbook for statistics.
Oh. I love it.
Which I took stats. I don't know if it was my first or second year, but I had never had a statistics class, and it blew my mind. I thought that was the coolest thing ever.
I love it.
That's awesome.
And I kept this stats book and cart. It was 4 inches thick. And we would cart this thing around. And finally, the last move we made, my wife said, "This book is not coming with us."
Oh, no.
So I parted with my stats book.
It's either me or the book.
Yeah, that's right. Right. And it was really a toss-up there for a little bit.
Jeez.
So, yeah.
I like that. I like that story.
So when I hear that students have to take stats here, I say, you know, you never know. It might change your life.
Absolutely.
You might wind up with the book forever.
I actually don't remember very much, considering I was in this building when I had Philosophy 1000, from the 10 philosophical mistakes, except for the first one, which is never confuse happiness for contentment. And it had a similar effect on me for the rest of my life, thinking about that. And that was barely the beginning of that course. I think we had 7 books that we had to read cover to cover, Plato and all this stuff. But that one was a quick read.
Can you imagine presenting that syllabus to one of our students today?
Can't even imagine.
They would just...
It was Mortimer Adler, by the way. The author was the original modern editor of the Encyclopedia Britannica. That's who wrote that book.
And you took this with Vaughn Adams.
Vaughn Adams, yeah, who I'm sure
that's
remember.
That's the guy I was thinking about.
Yeah, Professor Adams. Night.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was before.
He was involved in the union when I first got here and retired within 2 years, I think.
Okay.
I met him very, very briefly, but I remember him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember him.
30 years ago. Heather.
The Norton Anthology of English Literature, Volume 1A. No, I actually was trying to think. I think, you know, I'm remembering, and I still have this book somewhere. I think it's in my office upstairs, The Name of the Rose. I took my first, yeah. I was allowed to take a 300-level medieval history course.
Of course you were.
And as a freshman or a first-year student, and... I still have the copy.
I love that.
And that was before the movie came out, obviously. So.
Of course. That was great. And honestly, I'm going to reiterate again that anybody who sends in a set of questions, finishing with an imponderable, we've got the Burroughs Imponderables list. We can always go back to it. But that was a very nice place for us to begin and end. So I'll tell you what, folks. That is all the time that we have for today. I'd like to thank our panel by asking them to say goodbye. Stephen.
Goodbye.
Heather.
Bye-bye.
Todd.
Adios.
And Mara.
Hi.
And now these words.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the Toasty facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies and the College of Liberal Arts and Education at University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced and directed by Michael Jason and Brian Masonville, and our executive producer is Professor Jason Roach. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Miles.